Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
A bishop's meeting here in the Vatican strategizes on ways to protect children from abuse. One Australian archbishop tells us more about it. And foul play. As the World Cup soccer championship prepares to get underway in Germany, human rights and church activists are sounding the alarm over the sex industry's plans to cash in on the event. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Tracy McClure. Those are the stories we'll be looking at over the next half hour. Thanks for joining us. But first, Catherine Smybert takes a look at Pope Benedict XVI's pastoral visit Monday night to Rome's Basilica of St. John Lateran, opening a diocesan conference on faith and future generations.
As Pope Benedict XVI opened a conference for the Rome Diocese on the theme, The Joy of Faith and the Education of New Generations, he asked the youth of his city to have faith in their church. The Holy Father's words came as he met members of his diocese at Rome's Cathedral, the St. John Lateran Basilica, where he was welcomed by the vicar of the diocese, Cardinal Camillo Ruini.
Vostra Santità viene qui all'inizio del convegno.
One of the organisers behind this encounter is Father Marco Gnavi, an officer for the Vicariate of Rome. He told us the overall aim of the event.
The pastoral program will be focused on the communication of the gospel to the new generation and the joy of faith. These are two corners of the future of the church itself. I mean, in order to be a community welcoming the thirst of Christian life, which comes from the young people, but educating them to discover the truth of faith in the incarnate life of Jesus and in their own real life, to build their future on the rock of the gospel.
The event, of course, is a lead-up to a three-day conference organised by the Vicariate of Rome and will focus on an educative project for schools, a pastoral project for parishes and families, and a university chaplaincy body, as approved by Pope Benedict XVI himself.
Catherine Smybert there, reporting. Though it's not always in the news, it's an issue that remains in the back of every parent's mind, and one that has embroiled the church itself in controversy. Child abuse, whether by the clergy, teachers, or other adults, is a phrase no one wants to hear or even contemplate. Controversies surrounding abuse by priests in a number of countries have turned some Catholics off from their faith and forced churches to close, particularly in the United States. Members from English-speaking bishops' conferences around the world have been meeting regularly, though, over the past decade or so to try to work out a common strategy to protect the vulnerable in their dioceses, respond more effectively towards victims of abuse, and punish the perpetrators of abuse. Archbishop Philip Wilson of Adelaide, Australia, recently participated in one of these meetings in the Vatican. He told Catherine Smybert the bishops are committed to improving the church's response to child protection issues.
This is a topic and a theme that has significance for the whole human community, not just for the church. The church has a special role, I'd say a prophetic role, to play in this area, that our church communities should be places that are outstanding in the way that they look after children and vulnerable adults and so on. And as you know, one of the really grave scandals in the life of the church in our generation has been the way in which sexual abuse has been revealed and in the way that there was response or lack of response to those matters. So we have much to do. We have to respond when abuse has occurred, and we have to respond in a way that's just and supportive of the victims. We have to respond in a way that deals with the issues that have been created by that. But equally important is the fact that we have to turn towards the positive needs that we have in our current situation to do all that we can to provide communities for children and adults where people are able to be treated with dignity and respect and so on.
Archbishop Wilson says the bishops are working out strategies to protect children at a community level.
So that if there are people who would do them harm, we can identify those people, we can construct a situation where they're not going to get the opportunity to do that harm to our children. And we can do that by education, by the establishment of proper protocols of behaviour. We can do that by educating communities to love and care for their children, keep their eyes open and so on. That's a really important work too. If you positively look at all the things you can do to help children to grow and develop, one of the things you have to do first is to make sure they're protected. Mm-hmm. And so that parents, communities, parish priests, teachers in our schools are all aware of what needs to happen in order to follow the proper protocols about child protection.
And what does?
Well, I think one of the great things that does that is that you have to just educate people to be aware that unfortunately one of the ways in which our humanity breaks down is that there are some people who are dangerous to children. And we have to be aware that these people are there and that they will do everything they can to actually get to be able to fulfill the desires they have or the views that they have and so on. So being careful, being vigilant, educating children to be careful and also is a very important part of it. But the most important thing is that everyone has to be conscious of it, to look for anything that might be a sign there's something wrong and to do something effectively about it and so on. So that if you have an intuition look at that. And so every area has to develop the way in which they're going to do these. You can imagine child protection in a village in Africa presents certain issues that need to be dealt with in that culture and context. Sure. Child protection in the middle of a huge city area, like in the middle of Rio de Janeiro, with all the problems created by poverty, then operates in another dimension too. But each community looks at what needs to be done and can work on that, so things can happen that way.
Where do we draw the line, and what is the response? You know, is there a comfortability? Is there the availability of the church?
Well, there's no doubt that in a lot of our communities in the English-speaking world that people will regard the church quite negatively because of its history and because of what they see as being the failures that occurred in child protection and in dealing with sexual abuse and so on. Mm. That makes it all the more important for us now to be vigilant and creative in the way that we deal with this. And the only way that we can overcome the negativity is by being highly principled and effective in maintaining our standards, in our training, in our supervision and so on. And people have every right to expect that. Our Lord expects us to do that. Our Lord wants us to run communities where children are protected and looked after. And if we would tolerate anything, then you only have to look at what he said in the Gospels to realise how seriously he does take that, that those who would harm children are regarded by him in a really negative way. That's quite clear. I think there's lots that can be done. I think that people are already doing tremendous things, but we have much to do in order to move forward with this. And I think we have a lot to do in the area of education of awareness. Education of awareness, I'd even say that I believe the Catholic Church has a great opportunity ahead of itself in preparing for a new world for children and people by the way that we prepare people for marriage. And, you know, the church has been really insistent from the Second Vatican Council that we should take this seriously. And people are making valiant efforts all over the world. In my diocese, other dioceses all over the world. But we have to do more. We have to think about what is it that we need to do to be able to fulfill the requirements that are there to prepare our Catholic people and the others who come to us for marriage in the best way that we can to live out this reality. And I believe that, for instance, Catholic education in our schools provides us with a wonderful opportunity to do this, because we can take young people in our schools, in the educational setting, in a formational setting, prepare them.
True Catholic.
Yeah.
Opportunity.
Sure.
True schools that
sure.
Really teach.
Yeah. To prepare them well, to be husbands and wives and parents. To look at giving them the skills that enable them to run a Christian family in the midst of a secularized world and so on. Mm. That's where a lot of that renewal can take place. Mm. Because when it comes to it, and you're talking about children, the parents are the very center of all that. And we have to do all that we can in all of our programs, whether formational or dealing with problems. We have to recognize the key role that parents have to play in and make sure that that's followed.
And our thanks there to Archbishop Philip Wilson of Adelaide, Australia. I'd heard it all, but I wasn't prepared for this. Besides all the millions of dollars sponsors and businesses expect to earn from the World Cup championships in Germany, it seems the sex trade is also gearing up to cash in. The German sex industry is constructing huge tented brothels for soccer fans wishing to stoke their after-the-stadium passions. And as prostitution is legal in Germany, it seems authorities have given them the nod. But church groups and human rights activists are concerned. They fear thousands of women and girls will be trafficked into Germany during the World Cup and forced into prostitution to cater to that expected demand. Susie Hodges has been finding out why those fears could be all too justified.
Sex is not a sport. That's the slogan chosen by campaigners against trafficking in women and forced prostitution ahead of the World Cup tournament in Germany in June. The Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe has announced that it fears between 30 and 60,000 women and girls will fall victim to forced prostitution and abuse during the tournament. Their warning comes after the German sex industry has built a series of mega brothels to cater for the expected business from soccer fans. One of the main campaigners against sexual exploitation and trafficking of women in Germany is a faith-based organisation called Solvodi, or Solidarity for Women in Distress. Its founder is Leah Ackermann, a Catholic religious sister who outlines the dangers for women.
Suddenly, a lot of women will be brought to Germany for this event, and they will be forced into prostitution. There is a danger coming to Germany in this time. And so it was like we are showing the yellow card.
Another member of Solvodi is Anne Fitzgerald, who told me how their campaign works.
Well, we've decided to do a threefold campaign. It's built up as a prevention campaign in the countries of origin. So together with Renovabis, we've created flyers, posters in different languages and sent them out to over 100 organizations in 20 different countries just to inform women and girls about the problems of trafficking, the dangers of taking on job offers during the World Cup in case there's traffickers behind it. Then we've done a big information campaign in Germany to inform the public in general. And we've also set up a multilingual hotline with 24-hour coverage from the 1st of May until the 31st of July so that victims can call anytime and let us know if they're in trouble.
Anne says many members of the public in Germany are shocked with all the preparations to gear up for a huge boost in prostitution during the World Cup and the risk that some of those working in the sex business may be there against their will.
Well, we've had lots and lots of calls and emails from people who are very concerned and are asking how they can help us with our campaign. So it shows that they're all very interested and shocked, really. A lot of people are quite surprised and shocked that there will be almost certainly an increase in prostitution and then, because of that, forced prostitution, concerned with a big sporting event.
Sister Leah says they're pulling out all the stops to try to alert women to the risks of falling prey to these people traffickers and the abuse they may endure once they fall into their clutches.
We think that a lot of these women will not know the condition under them they will work here as a prostitute. They will be closed in, they will get no money, they will perhaps be beaten up and things like that. So we told them, be careful, don't fall in this trap of trafficking. So that's very important that the home countries get aware of this inhuman trafficking of women and children. And it's everywhere.
Many of the women who fall into this trap come from Ukraine in Eastern Europe, where an estimated 50,000 women fall victim to the people traffickers each year. Father David Naser is head of the Jesuit Refugee Service in Ukraine, and he explains why this market is flourishing.
There's quite a market in the trade of women. Now, the trafficking goes in two different ways. One is through apparent agencies that advertise in newspapers and in the subways, and we'll get you a job here, we'll handle all of the papers in Israel, in Germany, in Italy, no problem at all. And people will go unwittingly or with a certain risk into those agencies. The second means is simply brutal. There will be gangs, mafia gangs of Ukrainian or Russian mafia types who will simply, as it were, kidnap young women, smuggle them across the border, remove their documents from them, beat them into submission, and they have to work until they, as it were, pay off a debt or are not suitable for the trade anymore.
Sister Leah agrees with Father David that poverty and unemployment in these countries are often key factors in helping to encourage these women to explore what may seem like tempting job offers abroad.
The economic misery will forces a lot of these women to try other income possibilities. I don't think so very much the education situation, because lots of them have more education as some women coming from Africa, for instance. When you have even good education but no possibility to find work, it's also a forcing into adventure like prostitution.
In Germany, police statistics show that the vast majority of the women rescued from the clutches of the people traffickers were unaware beforehand that they would end up working as prostitutes.
Most of the time, they were told lies. That is for sure. For instance, the police of our country in Germany, they told us in 2004, 976 victims of trafficking were caught by the police. The police take them away from the brothels. From these 976, 175 were aware that it could be prostitution. And all the same, they got victims of trafficking because they didn't know how the violence is. So from this, more than 800 did not know that it was concerning prostitution. They thought they have to care for elderly people. They had to clean in some houses. They had to make the washing up in hotels. They thought they will go in the field and collect fruits and things like that.
Far from earning a good salary as they hoped, those who are trafficked to work in the sex trade end up as virtual prisoners and often suffer violence and abuse at the hands of their pimps as well. Sister Leah tells us the story of a teenage girl who managed to escape from her captors that is just one example of the brutal exploitation that these women and girls have to endure.
For instance, we have one woman. She was 70 years old. She was brought in a brothel, in a big brothel, and she was 9 months there without seeing for one moment the light of the day. So she was in her bed, in a room who was dark with the red light. She never was out in the street in all this time. Of course she was confronted with violence. She was beaten up. She didn't get any money. So one day, when everybody was very much drunken, she ran out and she asked a taxi to bring her to the police. But that is very, very seldom. Normally, the police is the one who is looking and who is finding them.
But what about the men who use the services of prostitutes? Are they aware that some of these women may have been trafficked into Germany and forced to work as sex slaves? Ulrich Richter is a missionary of Christ Sister in the German city of Leipzig, who works at a counselling service offering support for the victims of forced prostitution. She says they are distributing a special postcard ahead of the World Cup that is aimed at men who use prostitutes. She believes the clients of prostitutes have a moral responsibility to check that the women they go with are not the victims of trafficking.
We started here in Leipzig a campaign to alert clients about the problems in prostitution. And we created a postcard here to hand out it to the public.
And what do these postcards say?
We want to say that the men who use prostitutes have a special responsibility. They must look in what conditions this woman will work. And at the backside of this postcard, we have a list with signs. You can see that maybe this woman will be a victim of trafficking in human beings.
But what are the authorities doing in Eastern Europe to try to crack down at source on the mafia organisations that are engaged in the people trafficking? Father David says local corruption is often the reason why these mafia groups are still able to operate with impunity in Ukraine, although there are some hopeful signs.
Actually, charges and convictions have been laid in a progressively increasing number of cases year by year. So the message is certainly out there that this is not easily tolerated, that the criminals run a risk in running the organization. The weak side is obviously the history of the Soviet bureaucracy and governmental systems that are not so much geared towards people as geared towards the preservation of the state. In other words, the bureaucracy is very dense. There is corruption at the highest level still, so criminals can still pay off a highly placed official, and even when they're charged, find themselves excused. That is changing to the better at the given moment, but that still exists quite dramatically. If you have a lot of money, there are still some old cronies in the highest positions, and you can buy your way out.
When it comes to fighting against the practice of trafficking women for prostitution purposes, how important is the role of the Catholic Church? Father David again.
Half of all of the work done for the help of these victims is done by the Catholic Church. Now, that being said, altogether, not nearly enough is being done. And I mean that on the most objective terms. There are 3 or 4 or 5 offices, small offices in the country, that give out information and brochures. There are a couple of places that can receive trafficked women back. So it's a very small effort for a very large problem. But clearly, half of that effort is run by the Catholic Church. And certainly, the church leaders are encouraging religious orders like ourselves, who have these possibilities, to get more and more involved in the social sphere. And that's what we're doing through an organization like Jesuit Refugee Services in Ukraine.
But how easy is it for a woman who's been forced to work as a sex slave to return home, once she has either been rescued by the authorities or managed to escape from her captors?
That's a very good question, because on the one hand, you could say procedurally and legally, they can present themselves to the embassy, Ukrainian embassy, tell their story, get new documents and return home. But that's already a huge embarrassment in a country that has a certain self-pride, pride of presentation and education and experience. Furthermore, there's a pride in front of their families. They had told their families they were leaving the country to send them home money. For a year or 2 years, they didn't send home a penny. And so they're dealing with even the anger of their families. What happened to you? How dare you live for yourself? And now they have to confess. Explain what happened. Furthermore, where do they return? They return right to the village or the town or the neighborhood that sold them. In other words, the very gangs that are working in these areas are still there. Should they return to their home area, they would be beaten or picked up again for the lack of payment of their debt or for further work. So it's a horrible situation, and very many of them do not want to return home. They want to in their heart, but they're afraid to return home.
It's not just the sense of shame, says Father David, but also the psychological trauma that often takes a long time to heal.
There's the psychological trauma, the spiritual, physical trauma to deal with.
And how easy is it for these women to get over their psychological, their spiritual trauma and generally recover from this ordeal?
Well, you know how that really depends on the character of the individual, that some, obviously it's traumatic for anybody, but some can get over traumas and difficulties with a certain ease, and others are scarred for life.
That was Father David Naser of Jesuit Refugee Services in Ukraine. And you also heard the voices of Sister Leah Ackerman, Anne Fitzgerald, and Sister Ulrich Richter, campaigners against forced prostitution. And I'm Susie Hodges.
Well, that's all we have time for today. Thanks for listening. I'm Tracy McClure. If you'd like to hear this and other programs on our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org. Again, thanks for listening.
Listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudator Jesus Christus.